right, this is Pure Decking for October the 3rd. I'm guessing it's 2013. I don't really pay attention to these little details. This show about stuff that interests me. Stuff like descending into a police state, InfoSec, and whatever group we're accusing of being the Illuminati. I'm Morps, and tonight we've got RU, Madman, and Assard. So, I've got some Leinenflügel's Orange Shandy. And after that, I'm going to be getting into the Jim Beam. What'd you go get, Madman?
I got Four Roses, single
nice.
Barrel.
Nice. Shock top, I'm assuming, Sword?
No, I need to go. I'm going to do Roman Coat tonight. I'm going to go get something.
Nice. And I'm assuming RU's got the strong coffee, or just he's gone flat out for the morphine drip at this point.
Actually, I've just finished the coffee, and I'm now on hard water. Same stuff they use in reactors.
Well, you know, whatever it takes.
So just bottled. We get it bottled out of Fukushima these days. You can buy it by the liter now. It's extremely cheap.
So, you know, for when you're playing Fallout, the home game.
Mm-hmm. He's on haircuts too.
I'll bet.
I haven't had to shave in months.
So have you got win situation?
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for some of these growths to turn into extra limbs and I'll be fine then.
Waiting for the superpowers to kick in? Either that or the cancer.
Column A, column B, you know, whatever works.
As long as the superpower, you know, is not cancer, that's that'd be a
well, as long
superpower.
As they don't roll back my Medicare. I'm happy. I'm getting free treatment. So cancer it up, people, while you can. It's the number one catching disease these days.
I think that's right. Your all's healthcare is practically free. That explains many of the strange Live Leak videos I've seen out of
yeah.
You know, idiots sewing
themselves into
cactuses. Hey,
hold my beer. This will be great. Watch me catch this lawn dart with my tongue.
I wish they sold those in the States again. Javelins. They were wonderful javelins. You could go hunting with those or play lawn darts.
Probably why not do both? Still. I mean, you know. Like, oh, got the neighborhood dog. I mean,
hell, you could have a game on the White House front lawn on the hippie days.
No, there you go.
Win a hippie, win a dollar.
Oh, that'd be great. All right. So, a little bit of station news. We're kind of live fire testing the broadcast box because, well, I did a shit ton of work on it earlier tonight, and I'm not sure how apparent it was on the listener end that we were having problems with it because we brought it back up fairly quickly when we noticed it, but the thing was crashing like a lot. And a little bit of background: we run it in a virtual machine because. It's the software we use is Windows only, and I would love to run this thing on Linux, but we haven't found a good equivalent just yet. So, and last time I tried to switch the broadcast system to Linux, I believe the threats included references to Fight Club and firearms. So, yeah, kind of sticking with what we got for the moment. Anyways, we were running it in VirtualBox after our server had a pretty big problem, because I thought that VirtualBox would actually be easier to manage, but the performance issues were so severe that I took it back to KVM this morning. And the broadcast box seems like it's running a lot better. Everything seems clean. All of our checks came out pretty good, so we're testing it live on Decking to see how the recording comes out. So if the recording's shit, well, sorry, guys. But also props to the Data Shack guys, because when I was setting up KVM on the box, I screwed up pretty badly. I for some reason thought I had saved a config file and I hadn't, and it was full of a bunch of boilerplate config. So when I tried to bring up a network interface that wasn't properly configured, the box went down and I had zero access. But they got it fixed in about half an hour, which is pretty damn good turnaround time for a data center. So. Yeah, because we don't get KVM access to the box. It's network only. So if you break the network access, well, you're kind of pooched. So
you just must be their fantastic client. Just oh, yeah. Love
at this
it
point,
when
they're
your
probably watching our box
up.
Like a hawk.
Rightfully so, they should.
Yeah. But it's like, oh, please don't let that guy send us another ticket, please. But, yeah, no, they actually had really good turnaround time. They did a good job this time. So, props to them for getting it fixed when I goofed up. But that's what I get for trying to do five things at once and losing my SSH connection and thinking I'd save something. So, you know, hey, whatever. Anyway, so I thought we'd go ahead and move into our discussion topic here. Did y'all notice the Silk Road got taken down?
Oh, personally.
Yep. So that's kind of why I'm covering it. So like, well, every time I went looking for news stories, that was what I found. And I've got links to three different articles here that are hitting a couple of different aspects of it. Two of them are from Ars Technica, and the last one's from the BBC. Just to kind of summarize here, the Silk Road was shut down completely. Its administrator, who went by the handle Dread Pirate Roberts, who apparently was Ross William Ulbricht, who was a 29-year-old Texan, was arrested. And the, let's see here, Bitcoin's worth about, what was it, $3.6 million were seized. So $3.6 million worth of Bitcoins was seized. Last time I checked it, Bitcoin was about 126. Suave told me right before the show it was getting closer to 130 on Mt. Gox. So the damage they caused to Bitcoin by just grabbing a large chunk of it is recovering. But one of the reasons they went after the guy was apparently he put out a hit on one of his employees, because one of the employees for Silk Road apparently just took a delivery for a kilo of coke and just kept it, and then threatened to reveal names to law enforcement if, I guess, they tried to do anything about it. So the guy who ran it supposedly offered $80,000 for somebody to torture and kill the guy.
Wow.
So,
I would have done a brick of coke.
I mean, you know, hey. It's a drug ring. I guess you shouldn't be all that surprised, but
you can't really go to the cops and say, he stole my coke.
People do it.
Do something about
part.
It. I know.
The longevity of life is not going to a drug dealer. Hey, by the way, I stole your coke. It was me. And if you do anything about it, guess what I'm going to do?
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, apparently, there are screenshots all over the place. If you try to go to the Silk Road on tour, you get a page. It's one of those really bad DOJ. This page was seized, but it actually says this hidden domain has been seized by the Department of Justice. Huh. So they're seizing tour addresses as well as regular URLs, which is just fantastic. So I am curious to how they added
back their docnet.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they built it. So, I mean, you know, I'm just curious how they went about IDing the guy. I'm pretty sure they got somebody in his organization to turn tailcoat and, you know, rat on him. But, or maybe they planted somebody. I don't know. But I'm fairly certain we're not getting the full details.
I already know what happened. See, this dude took delivery of a key of coke and then said he was going to spill all the names of everyone on the Silk Road, and then found out that they put a hit on his ass. And he was like, man, I'm about to get shot, and I'm not going to be able to enjoy this $27,000 worth of coke I just stole from my boss. I think I should call the FBI and get put in witness protection before somebody feeds me my own damn balls.
You know, I mean, they're mentioning it in the IRC, and I was going to bring up this point. I thought the government was shut down. How are they operating here? How are they arresting people and shutting down tour sites if they're...
Dude, it's coke. The government go crazy for coke. Hell, half the surfaces in the White House are tainted with coke. The carpet in the Oval Office is never vacuumed because it's full of coke.
Yeah, it's vacuumed. How often do you think the president's down there with a rolled up $100 bill?
Every second chance he gets.
Hell, wow.
I would. Think about it. You're the number one leader of the free world, and you can get your hands on coke. No one can stop you. So what? They can't kick you out? No, you can be the first openly coked up president.
Yeah, I'm just wondering why you would even have... I mean, if you're running something like the Silk Road, you even employ somebody who might even think about going this far. I mean, I know money and stuff can change people, but I mean, if it was me personally running something like this, I probably drew it all myself and just not say a word to anybody, because I mean... That's how you get caught. You start going into people.
Think about having employees. Generally, in a criminal conspiracy, you want to know you're either going to kill the other guy who's there, or he's going to have your back.
Right. That's why when he was setting up the Silk Road, he should have invited all of his employees over one day, just a meet and greet, and then hired a bum, stuck him in a silk suit, put him at the table. When everyone there's eating, just pull out a gun, shoot the bum, because you don't really need him. You just need an example that you're willing to kill somebody.
Well, and then why everyone would be good. Bum? Just pick with somebody at random.
I was going with, I would only employ people in a conspiracy that I needed to run the conspiracy. So, the bum, no one would know he was just a bum. I just needed someone there I could shoot.
Yeah, but think of the motivational factor of... He just shot the fucking accountant.
If the fucker can add up without taking his shoes off, the accountant's dead. But another thing here I don't think the media has even touched on. Think about when this guy started this website, the Silk Road sort of thing. The trust that he had to build within the community of people already afraid of writing things down.
Oh, yeah.
And doing it. And as Ben, the major, were talking about it yesterday... I just lost the entire thought process right there.
Well, sorry. I mean, if you think about it, you're talking about selling. I mean, Silk Road had everything. I mean, they had. I mean, a lot of it honestly looked like bullshit, but I'm sure a lot of the drug stuff was real. A lot of the physical materials was real. They talked about putting out hits and requests for theft. I'm sure some of the requests for theft were real. I mean, they're making fun of me in the chat room for saying shooting the accountant. That was just the first job that came to mind. So, you're probably right. You probably shouldn't shoot the accountant. You should just shoot like somebody who's got a redundant job. That way the other guys pick up the slack. But
we just shot the guy that's doing our money laundering.
Ooh. Yeah,
well, if you're making enough money, it doesn't matter. You don't need me.
Yeah, we just... Our accountant is the plastic bag we throw the money in under the bed. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, getting the kind of operation going on there that, you know, people would trust it enough to order stuff online.
Yeah, it takes a lot to build a business like that. And this young man, if he ever gets out of prison with an anus intact... he's going to be a big self-starter once again.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. So, but, it is interesting as a side effect that the FBI has seized 3.6 million worth of Bitcoin, and they damaged the value of Bitcoin for a while there. Now it's starting to come back. But my understanding is...
If the government seized Bitcoin, doesn't that just lend legitimacy to Bitcoin? If the government is taking it?
There was a judge in Texas who pretty much agreed that Bitcoin was money. So at this point, I'm pretty sure they're considering Bitcoin to be money.
There's a judge in Texas who also said that a person with an IQ of 68 is still in charge of his own crimes. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but you got to do something for entertainment down there, right? I mean,
yeah, I suppose.
So, I mean... I find it interesting that Bitcoin is recovering quickly, but that's a fairly big chunk of the Bitcoin, supply, because there's a limited amount of that stuff. I mean, once they're all generated, they're all generated, and there's going to be some loss just due to data failure and, things sitting around, people losing them and stuff like that. But, I mean, that's a lot of Bitcoins leaving the ecosystem. Now, I don't know how many of those are just kind of sitting on a Mount Gox, on a Silk Road account, you know, how many of them were not being used in the, I guess what you'd say, the more above board uses of Bitcoin, like buying hookers. But, oh, right, sorry, escorts. I forgot they were escorts.
Right.
The FBI might be monetizing it. The DEA usually monetizes the stuff they seize during drug raids.
I don't know that the FBI would know how to use a freaking Bitcoin, though. That's the thing.
They call up one of their tech support guys and says, hey, I need to sell this.
Well, that's true. I mean, they might go back into circulation just coming out of the FBI instead of the whoever had them originally. So, I don't know. I just, it's interesting that that large of a chunk just got yanked.
FBI going to be buying a lot of pieces from Domino's.
Yeah, that's yeah. I mean, what you think about it for a minute, though, the way Bitcoin works, anytime you have a large amount of them just go up like that, I mean, you know, you have, you do have, all these exchanges. Like, what if they went in and just seized everything Mt. Gox had? You've seen lots of these exchanges get their bank accounts shut down.
Right.
So,
good point. I haven't thought about that. What does happen to all those Bitcoins?
I see them asking the RC, does seized cash get recirculated? Sort of. If you look up forfeiture, pretty much when it's related to drug crimes, the law enforcement agency involved can seize it, and it goes into the assets that they seize from drug dealers pretty much go in their budgets.
Really?
So,
wow.
I don't know. I don't know what they would do with Bitcoin. But I would imagine they would probably auction it off, and, you know, just like any other police auction, right? Just auction it off and throw it in the fund.
Yeah, they'd monetize it the same way they do when they seize cars and houses. You can bid on a drug dealer's car and house every day.
Wow.
So, anyways, it's just interesting that they seize. I honestly, I don't give a shit that they took down Silk Road. I mean, I guess if that's where you were getting your whatever supply from, I mean, whatever you're into, but I figured if you're into that stuff, you probably know where to get it offline anyways.
There's some things I don't want to deal with through the mail.
Yeah.
I want my drug dealer to be nice and very, you know, scared of me.
So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm not concerned about people getting their stuff. It's interesting that the exchange went away, but I imagine, you know, actually, I imagine they're going to be going like mad trying to identify people from all the records, because you know they have to have records. You would hope something like Silk Road wouldn't be keeping any records beyond their current transactions, but you know, people have a way of keeping notes on this kind of stuff. So I would tend to think that those records have been seized, and if you've done anything on Silk Road, well, I don't know what to tell you.
A few secondary bullets. And hope that you didn't have your drugs shipped to your house.
Yeah.
Anybody who's done that is retarded.
Not really.
Yeah, just at that point, just, you know, run for, I don't know, Cuba, someplace they're not going to go in to extradite you.
It depends. Like, even if you did get it shipped to your house, if you've done it the right way, nothing will ever come of it. The way it's all set up.
Yeah.
And if you're smart enough, you didn't actually get quantities large enough to actually cause you any jail time. And if you're smart enough, you weren't in the country called America with a war on drugs.
So what you're saying is hopefully you didn't have coke or crank shipped to your house.
Pretty much.
Pretty much anything worth shipping to your house is enough that you're doing some prison time for.
You know, I don't know about everybody else, but with all the housing stuff going on, there's enough unoccupied homes that you could use the address from and just go pick it up from the mailbox. That yeah,
having it was reasonably safe. I can't see any mass drug raids coming from it, not for little individual purchases anyway. They're going to go after the dealers first. That's if they do have any information. But anybody worth, anybody who's got a bit of nous about themselves, apart from the dude who got busted, has already got rid of every hard drive, every piece of evidence, and started looking for a legal job.
Oh.
And
The Dread Private Roberts, he's currently talking to the FBI saying, "Hi, here are the names of my suppliers. How much time am I not doing?"
Exactly. So it's not the little person who bought it. It's going to be the dudes who are moving mass quantities of gear on there. And let's face it, what's going to come after the Silk Road? What are we going to see? Is it going to be the Mexican cartels running something, or the Russians?
Yeah,
or
the
Colombians? Yeah.
I mean, now that it's been done once and the initial one got shut down, you know there's going to be other people coming in trying to fill the gap.
Of course.
So, I love that a Tor domain has the stupid C's graphic that some student made. I mean, that's such a joke. They're asking what all was sold and traded on the Silk Road. All manner of great illegal stuff. Drugs. It was basically an eBay with no restrictions. And so drugs was mostly what was moved on there that you'd hear about. But there was all kinds of stuff on there. They love going for the glamorous stuff, the human organs, hit jobs.
To my knowledge, there was no weapons sold on the Silk Road. That was one of the no-nos. The major is more up on it than I am.
Well, the markup, at least in the States, on weapons wouldn't be enough to really justify doing anything with them.
3D printed weapons. I should quit reading the IRC when we're doing.
If you want a weapon that can't be traced to you, you just go to a gun show. So there wouldn't be a reason to have a black market in guns in the U.S.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's interesting, and I'm curious to see what all comes of it. So
I think the legal arguments that will come out of this case will be really cool.
I'm not sure. I mean, it was all done through Tor, but I'm pretty sure they tracked him some other way. So, I don't know. I mean, Tor has taken quite a beating here lately. You know, they had the malware a while back. They've had a bunch of their servers get shut down. Now they had Silk Road get shut down. Yeah, I'm really glad I was pointing people at I2P a couple of weeks back.
That's just the thing. Tor got so popular, and it kind of went mainstream, and then look what happened. I don't know. If Tor is going to be considered unsecure and everyone starts moving to I2P, what's to say the same thing isn't going to happen?
Well, I2P is not as server based as Tor is. I mean, there's still servers involved, but they're not playing as big a role. So I think it will be harder on I2P, but I think you're right. I think it will eventually get there.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I'm just thinking, how would they track chain of evidence? Because if I was running something on the internet that's pretty much just a brokerage house, I would never take possession of anything illegal.
Doesn't matter, they're charging him as a facilitator. So, I don't know. I don't know enough legalese on what this guy's getting charged with. I just... Oh, well. None of us are going to come to any conclusions on this other than just we're all kind of waiting to see what happens. So
I don't think we'll even hear what happens.
You're probably right. It'll probably just disappear and that'll be the end of it.
You think he'll plead out?
Oh, he already is.
There's so much more going on in the news. That this Silk Road thing didn't even make a mention on our news. Only mainly on the internet. But with the American government in turmoil, Greece, global politics, things like that, you won't hear shit about this kid.
Right.
I'll lock him up. He'll get 12 years.
Was the Silk Road based out of the U.S.? Is that possibly why also?
He was running it out of Texas.
Yeah, he's a Texan.
Oh, wow. Huh. I was just thinking that might be another... I don't know.
They do him bigger and illegal in Texas.
I think the real question is, which prison gang will he join?
I'm wondering if they're going to send their judge and jury off to get a little bit of computer training so they understand what the hell they were talking about.
You would hope,
what am I saying? Of course not.
Yeah, of course not.
So, all right, let's go ahead and move on to...
He was popped in San Francisco. They might pull some Silicon Valley nerds in there for the jury.
Oh, that'd be good. So, all right, let's go on to a first story here. This one's from Ars Technica. The American government obtained a secret order from a federal judge in Virginia demanding that Lavabit hand over its private SSL key, enabling authorities to access Edward Snowden's email, an email belonging to Lavabit's 400,000 other users as well. That sealed order, dated July 10th, 2013, was first published on Wednesday by Wired reporter Kevin Paulson. A judge at the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, where the case is currently being heard, unsealed the set of court documents on Wednesday. Lavabit, the Texas-based email provider, provided secure email services to thousands of people, including Snowden. They didn't go into Snowden. Neither Ladar Levinson, the owner of the shuttered email service, nor his attorney, Jesse Benall, immediately responded to Ars' request for comment. However, Ars also received a copy of the unsealed documents from Lavabit's defense team. The new 162-page set of documents shows that Lavabit was first served with a PIN register and a trap-and-trace device order, which would require the handover of one of its users' login details. As Lavabit encrypts those details, they wouldn't have done much good for the government's case. Indeed, Levinson told the court in a July 16th hearing that he had always agreed to the installation of the PIN register devices, as they would have yielded almost zero useful data because it's all encrypted. PIN trap devices have become standard operating procedure for law enforcement officials in recent years. If Lavabit hadn't encrypted the information, using one of the devices would have given authorities all header information from Snowden's email account, IP addresses, date, time information, among other things. Snowden says his sole intention was to prompt national security debate. I think I got some crap from images pasted in here. The American government obtained a secret order from a federal judge in Virginia. Wait, I just read that. Okay, I screwed up my copy-paste into the show notes here. Let me find it. Okay, here we go. Lavabit was then served with a search warrant for the SSL private key and a wiretap, which requires a notably higher legal standard than the previous court order for the PIN register. By July 9th, prosecutors had asked the court to hold Levinson in contempt of court, and he argued... And he continued to resist, arguing that by handing over the key, he would be compromising the security of all users. So they were going to hold him in contempt because he wasn't handing over his master encryption key, his SSL key. In an August 1 hearing, Judge Claude Hilton said that it was effectively Levinson's fault that the sites only had a single private SSL key. You're blaming the government for something that's overbroad, but it seems to me that your client is the one who set up the system that's designed not to protect that information, because you know that there needs to be access to the calls that go back and forth from one person to another, the judge asked Levinson's attorney, Jesse Beinart. And to say that you can't do it just because you've set up a system that has to be unencrypted, if there's such a word, it doesn't seem to me to be very persuasive. So the government's argument was, well, you should have used more than one SSL key. Oh, I love that.
I don't think they should be able to get a warrant for 400,000 users.
Yeah,
just exactly. Get all of Edward Snowden's crap. The dude's just ordered, hey, we want Edward Snowden's crap, decrypt it, give us a copy now.
Well, I don't think he actually could decrypt it. That's the thing. The way Lavabit was set up, if I remember correctly, it was you know, he didn't have the keys, or all of them anyways, to actually decrypt what was stored on the servers. You know, he had the SSL, so they could decrypt the live connections, like if he logged into the thing. Bunnell goes on to explain that Levinson would be willing to log the particular users in this case, but noted that it would be burdensome. Within a month, Lavabit still had not complied to the court's satisfaction. In fact, he handed over pages of the key typed in 4-point font. Oh, that's awesome!
Wow.
He printed nice. Out the key in 4-point font and handed it to them. And Levinson was ordered to pay a $5,000 fine for each day he did not comply. On August 8th, he shuttered Lavabit entirely, destroying the company's servers. There's information that I can't even share with my lawyer, let alone with the American public, Levinson told Democracy Now! In August 2013. So if we're talking about secrecy, you know, it's really been taken to the extreme, and I think it's really useful being the current administration, or it's really being used by the current administration to cover up tactics that they may be ashamed of. And they updated the page. In a press release published on his Facebook page, Levinson confirmed the unsealing and laid out his defense. People using my service trusted me to safeguard their online identities and protect their information. I simply could not betray that trust, he said. If the Obama administration feels compelled to continue violating the privacy rights of the masses just so they can conduct surveillance on the few, then he should at least ask Congress for laws providing the authority instead of using the courts to force businesses into secretly becoming complicit in crimes against the American people. So here's the question. When he, you know, they took him to court and they were demanding the encryption keys and access to all this stuff. So instead he shut down the service. Is that, I mean, does that free him of responsibility of it at this point? Because it's like, we don't have it anymore. It's gone. We shut down.
No. I can get served with a warrant saying, turn over my documents. If I run them through a shredder, then I've just destroyed evidence.
Yeah, destroyed evidence or, you know, tampering with evidence or something.
Yeah.
My problem with it is they went to a secret court. You can't have a free society if your courts are shuttered from the public.
Well, I mean, how can you make informed decisions? I mean, even as a business in this guy's case, if you don't know what the laws are, and a secret court means you don't know what the laws are. I mean, am I wrong?
No, you're correct. The court has to be out in the open with what it's doing. I don't like the FISA court because it's secret.
And I mean, if you don't know what the rulings are, and judge rulings are essentially what we base law on, how can you make informed decisions as a citizen, as a business, as anybody?
Well, it's not just informed decisions. What if I had an interest in this ruling? How can I submit a brief to the court pointing out my points of view on it?
Yeah, like, what if you had a LavaBit account and you wanted to say something about them being able to, you know, decrypt everyone's stuff? You're absolutely right. You couldn't do anything about it. I mean, the first anybody heard about this was LavaBit shut down. So, it's
I don't know how LavaBit was set up. It couldn't actually look into any of the stuff on its servers.
My understanding was that it couldn't. The way the encryption was set up, the only way that they'd get into it is when the guy logged in and that they could sniff his connection. And that's why they wanted the SSL key. Because it was anonymizing who was connecting to it and what was being sent back and forth. But it was an email service, so once you got the connection information, you could get into the account and see what all they had. But my understanding was if it was offline, it was stored encrypted and, you know, you couldn't get in without the password. I mean, he said he was willing to put the pen and trap device on his network because he knew it wouldn't do any good.
Right.
So,
I mean, all of us, I'm sure, are thinking, you know, stand up, you know, hats off to this dude for standing up for his customers.
Oh, they're
going to
destroy his life for this. And, yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure I could have done that.
Right. Well, anyone.
He's a ballsier man than I am. Because right. They're going to charge him with all kinds of crap, and they could bury his ass.
When they're that tiny, man, it's not that hard. But,
Yeah, in the IRC, they're saying encryption doesn't mean you're hiding anything. That's true. No, encryption could just be, you know, make you feel better as a person. But encryption scares authority figures because it means they can't look in and check whenever they want, which is why they're going after so much of this stuff. And it's why all the NSA and FBI people going after SSL keys, because obviously they can't break the encryption in a reasonable period of time. That's why they're just ordering through the court system. They're trying to solve a technical problem from their point of view with a legal solution. So they're coming with the bat of law and, you know, Homeland Security levels, letters and secret courts to say, give us the keys, give us the encryption, give us the back doors, because they can't actually get in to, you know, they can't break the encryption on their own. So it's a mess because it means anybody running any kind of network service could suddenly be subject to this crap. You know, they could, hell, I could get the knock at the door and say, we want to see who else connecting to Galaxy 15 radio, and you have to log it, period, full stop. And, you know, what do you do, right?
Right.
Otherwise, he could tell us to start with.
Yeah.
No, you're right. I couldn't. If that happened and I told you guys about it, I mean, I'd be in the same shit this guy's in.
I'd expect you to take it. I'd fucking take it. Fucking hell, whatever they say, man. Come after me. You're not going to get my fucking friends. Dude, I'll clam up and fucking not say another word ever before I roll over on anyone else.
You'd fucking know. You all would fucking know.
Yeah, I know, man. But, yeah, dude, I'm just saying. Fucking good on this guy. I'm sorry for the shit life you're going to go through, but if enough of us stand up and go, no, fuck you, you can't have my encryption codes, fuck off. Eventually, everyone's going to stand up. There'll be enough of us that they can't fucking bulldoze us over the top all the time. That's the goddamn fucking problem right now. Everyone's so fucking shit scared of the authorities. Oh no, they're gonna take away my shit. Fucking man up. There's enough of us to stand up and say no, fuck off. Stop having your private courts. We're people. We run the show, not you. You're an elected official. We dictate the rules. If we all stood up together, there'd be enough of us.
I hope when it happens, man.
Yeah, me too. And, Sarge, your headset's about to die.
Thanks.
Yeah, he is getting kind of that Cylon-ish sound to him, isn't he?
The little warning beep in the background.
My problem with these warrants is they keep going after masses amount of people. They don't need the information from all 400,000 users. The warrant should just be specific to, we want Edward Snowden's crap, instead of, we're spying on everyone.
Yeah, that's hard.
You can't just single one person out. You've got to give them all an award.
Oh!
No. I do believe the protection from unreasonable search and seizure says, yes, they have to prove that whatever they're going after is reasonable, and they can only do that one person at a time.
Why do you think they're still using secret courts to do this shit?
Yeah, you're still under the assumption this is 1970 America, man, where the court systems actually work.
Oh, boy. All right, let's go on to the next one here. This one's from TheAge.com. A Melbourne-based music label has been caught up in a legal battle in the U.S. after one of its automatically generated copyright warnings demanded a famous copyright lawyer remove his own lecture from YouTube.
Nice.
The lawyer, Harvard professor Lawrence Lessing, responded by launching his own legal action. Liberation Music ordered the takedown of a 49-minute YouTube video of a 2010 lecture he had given in South Korea. The lecture contained snippets of a song that Liberation owns the rights to in Australia and in New Zealand. While YouTube shut down public access to the video on about June 30th, it has since restored access. It appears that Liberation Music had retracted its notice since it threatened Professor Lessing with legal action in July. In other words, they figured out, oops, sued the wrong guy, and tried to back off, and he's not letting them do it. We reinstate content when we receive a retraction from the party who originally submitted the notification, a spokeswoman for Google in Australia said. Google owns YouTube. Meanwhile, Professor Lessig's own legal action accuses the company of extremist enforcement tactics because it automatically issues takedown notices whenever computers detect its songs without taking fair use allowances into consideration. I have the opportunity to challenge this particular task. I am hopeful the precedent this case will set will help others to avoid such a need to fight, Professor Lessig said recently. A spokeswoman for Mushroom Music, which owns Liberation, told Fairfax Media that she had been advised by the company's lawyers not to comment. I love that line. Liberation has yet to file a defense of Professor Lessig's complaint, which has been filed in the U.S. District Court of Massachusetts. Professor Lessing argues Liberation Music enforces its purported rights robotically and makes no effort to examine whether this alleged breach fell within fair use limits of copyright law, which he believes it did. During the 49-minute lecture on content collaboration, he demonstrates call and response communication through five examples of homemade videos of people dancing along to the hit song Litztomania by French band Phoenix. Each clip lasts between 10 and 47 seconds, and Professor Lessing spoke throughout the songs. YouTube received a takedown notice from Liberation on about June 30th and shut down public access. Professor Lessing issued a counter notice, but then received a direct response from Liberation Music on July 8th, threatening legal action against him in the District of Massachusetts, including a potential of $150,000 fine for copyright infringement. A letter from Liberation confirms the song was detected through automated scanning software. YouTube has a system called Content ID that scans videos for any audio or video used without permission. It has a library of 3 million reference files supplied by content owners, which we know includes things like the sound of wind, birds chirping, and silence. It's unclear why Liberation was taking action in the U.S. rather than the U.S. rights holders, Glassnode Entertainment Group. Although Liberation's music takedown notice purported to claim that Professor Lessig's use of Litzomania infringed Liberation Music's copyrights, this was a false statement. In fact, Liberation Music has implemented and enforced a policy of issuing takedown notices automatically whenever its content is used on YouTube, Professor Lessig's amended complaint states. So, the rest of this is legalese going on, pretty much detailing that Lessig believes it was fair use and that it was an automated system, and of course, Liberation Music tried to yank the complaint and walk away from it, and he's not letting them do it. So, that's interesting. And I love it, because these automated takedowns are just a joke anyways.
As we've seen time and time again.
Oh, yeah. Huh. But, I mean, I've always said at this point, don't bother trying to use YouTube to post anything original. I know it's where all the users are, but Their content, their copyright stuff is so aggressive, you're going to get somebody else's ads all over your videos. So, at this point, I just say you can't use YouTube for anything hardly anymore.
Right. Crazy, dude.
So,
like that for a while.
Ridiculous. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's cool somebody's suing him back. That's nice.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like RU said, I mean, if you stand up and enough people do it, maybe something will finally fucking happen. They'll pull their head out of their ass and quit doing automated takedowns.
Yep.
No. I don't see the problem with as much with the people sending out the automated takedown notice. I think it's Google's problem. Why the fuck is Google assuming that those guys are correct?
Yeah.
It's the headache at this point. They get so many of the damn things, they don't know what else to do.
Right.
And what you do is be like, go after the users. We're just a platform. Suck my fucking balls.
Why are they suing the ISPs and saying, hey, you need to block these people because they're torrenting stuff from us? It's the same thing. It's not the ISP's fault, you know?
They are.
I know, they are. That's what I'm just saying. It's ridiculous that they are, because it's...
Well, I've dealt with these DMCA complaints on a... Not scale Google gets them, but I've had to deal with quite a few of them, you know, in one whack, and they're automated. They're a pain in the ass. There's no checking going on. My favorite is when I get complaints for IP addresses that nobody's signed into. Like, literally, they're not assigned. They're blank. They're dead. There's not a machine on them. Those are great. And, you know, there's, like, no traffic logs or anything. So, these things are a joke. They're a script running somewhere that hits, you know, a torrent, grabs every IP in it, and just blasts out abuse emails to the, you know, wherever they can find them for the, you know, they go check the DNS databases, grab the abuse emails, and just blast them out. And these things are full of legalese, and they look scary as hell, and they're asking for $5,000. I mean, these things honestly look like spam. They are the same damn thing as the Nigerian prince crap, you know.
Freedom, like, you know, spam
click
them.
This link, give us money. That's exactly what they are.
Right.
And there's no identifying content in these things. And if it weren't for a legal requirement that we respond to these things, I would delete them.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a fucking joke. But I just love that somebody's suing them back, because obviously, you know, like this Liberator Music, they obviously haven't looked at what the system's doing. They've set up a script and let it run. And, you know, somebody's suing them back. I mean, you know, it's a way of getting their attention of like, hey, you all need to look at what the fuck you're doing here.
Right. It's not right that they can just set up some random bot when some random script somewhere and have it go do all of its fucking. I mean, this isn't just like, hey, take it down. you know, take it down. This is like, take it down or else we're going to sue your ass for some ridiculous amount of money, tie you up in legal fees and all sorts of, you know, crazy shit. So you're like, they're fucking with people's lives. It shouldn't be automated.
I've come up with a great denial of service attack for businesses.
Oh, that
like
Sony happens.
Or anyone that pisses me off due to their overzealous copyright crap, just write a bot to start sending out complaints on all of their websites or any website that uses their shit.
Huh.
I mean, we've already seen Google will take down videos and crap for however long.
How many Sony movies?
Well, the thing is, to get them automatically taken down, you have to be one of the companies that's in an agreement with them to get access to the system. If you just issue complaints as, you know, one account, they might look at it eventually, but they're not going to be automatically taken out. That's the bitch of it. You know, things like YouTube and, we had the story last week, the file sharing site, was it Nukefile? They actually just went ahead and gave them access to the console so they could delete files. And they were just claiming everything and deleting shit. And I mean, it's such a fucking mess. And the DMCA is such a bad law. I mean, you want to talk about a poorly written law, because it gives all the power to anybody who holds a copyright and any other systems related to it. The DMCA basically mandates that ISPs and websites and servers are required to do free work for copyright holders, you know, to keep the copyrighted stuff out off of their systems. And, you know, it's like it puts all of the onus on one party in that agreement who has nothing to do with it. It's just, you know, some users uploading crap trying to move it, and it puts all the onus on the ISP, all of the onus on the website or the service providers. It's total bullshit, but you can't get anybody to challenge it because the RIAA and PAA have pretty deep pockets, and they keep their lobbyists well fed. So, yeah, I'm a bit of a personal crusade against those assholes.
I'm sure there's a little, you're not the only one.
it just drives me nuts.
Yeah,
I mean, honestly, I would love to send these assholes a bill every time we get a complaint. I'd be more than happy to process the things. Here's your bill.
Yeah.
Write them a letter saying it takes 6 to 12 months rental time before you can reach that ticket.
Well, you know, it's kind of like any kind of a payment system, right? You know, you go to pay them, they take your money immediately. You want a refund, it takes 6 to 8 weeks to process. Why not do
there
it the
you
other,
go.
You know? I mean...
You submit this ticket, it'll take me 6 to 8 weeks to even fucking look at it.
Yeah.
At one point, I was getting so many of them, that wasn't unrealistic.
Right.
You know, by the time I got looking at them, they'd rolled out of the system, so it was just like, well, fuck. Like, well, our logs have rotated and those are gone. I mean, sorry. So. Anyways. Let's see, next story here. This is from ZDNet. Creator of the World Wide Web and director of the web standards body W3C, Tim Berners-Lee has reaffirmed his support for baking support for copyright-protected media into HTML5. Proposals to add encrypted media extensions to the next specification for HTML, the markup language used to create web pages, have prompted letters of protest from multiple digital rights groups and activists. EME would provide a hook for DRM-protected audio, video, and other content within HTML, but notable free software code advocates such as the Electronic Frontier Foundation, the Free Software Foundation, have called the proposals disastrous. They argue it is an attempt to elevate the business interests of movie studios and tech giants, employees of Microsoft, Google, and Netflix, drafted the specification, over the greater good of an open web where information can be shared freely, as well as placing unacceptable restrictions on how individuals use computers. In a letter to the W3C earlier this year, a consortium of 27 groups opposing EME wrote the specifications would harm interoperability, enshrine non-free software in W3C standards, and perpetuate oppressive business models. This week, opponents of EME suffered a further setback as it was revealed that Tim Berners-Lee had rejected calls for the W3C to renounce its support for embedding playback protected content in HTML, a goal set out in the proposed W3C HTML working group charter. While we remain sensitive to the issues related to DRM and usage control, the director reaffirmed his earlier decision that ongoing work is in scope, said a W3C posting earlier this week. So, yeah, apparently they're going to put DRM in the next iteration of HTML5, or HTML, probably 6, I guess, or whatever they call the next one.
Great.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be baked right in. So how long do you think before there's the browser extension just to turn that off?
The day after it gets released.
I'm betting the day of, but, you know.
Yeah. 2 hours.
I don't know. The code could leak. I think the extension to turn it off will be available before the code's released.
Yeah.
That's probably true.
I've watched movies before they were out in theaters. I'm thinking this is going to get leaked just as quick.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things where you just hate to see it in the fucking standard. I mean, I understand why they're doing it. They're doing it for things like Netflix and YouTube to be able to put in the restrictions they need to agree, you know, so they can make their legal agreements with content providers. But at the same time, what you're doing, one, the security holes this thing is going to open up is crazy, because since it's going to restrict what you can and cannot do with content, I'm envisioning the drive by download that the cancel button gets the DRM flag, so it's going to install and you can't stop it, because everything that would stop it is DRM to, you know, control it. Not to mention, what do you think the advertisers, you know, banner ad people, what the hell do you think they're going to do with this? It isn't going to be pretty. Because if you think about the kind of hooks that a DRM solution has to have into a system, because they have to prevent the extraction, the copying, the recording, the saving of, you know, anything beyond caching, right, of DRM content. So I just, you know, you hook that in with some of the other stuff that's already in JavaScript and a few other, you know, a few of the HTML standards. Yeah, this is going to be abused like mad.
You mean I don't have to click accept to get Bonsai Bunny on my computer anymore?
Not only will you not have to click accept, it'll be DRM'd so that it'll be able to track you down no matter what website you visit, because it'll be DRM'd to the point you couldn't remove it. Because this is going to be some pretty serious hooks into a system to make this kind of thing work. I think you're going to have to set up virtual machines to go browsing on the web when this kind of crap comes out, because it's going to be bad.
Jeez.
Great, burn a computer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Use it once, reformat. Use it once, reformat.
Yeah. Well, use a VM and snapshot and roll back to the snapshot, but still, same concept. I mean, or like live flash drives or something, because
I'll get more use out of Puppy Linux.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because it's going to be just the malware abusing this crap is going to be terrible. I mean, you're going to have pop-up ads that you're not going to be able to close.
Right.
Because you know one of the functions of DRM, these DRM hooks, is going to be, you know, like the YouTube ads, right? You know, where you have to watch the 2-minute ad before you can watch the 30-second video.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the DRM is going to be so you can't block or skip past or, you know, get rid of those ads or ad block. The DRM is going to require that they're showed. So when those kind of hooks exist, what do you think is going to happen when it's not just the basic, you know, ads on YouTube that want to use those?
Tell you what happens, Morps. People will get the shits with YouTube. They'll stop going. Some young entrepreneur will start another website like YouTube. And it won't have any DRM, and everyone will gravitate towards that. It'll get too big that it needs money, so it'll start selling ads and DRM on that. People will move away from that. And, yeah, we'll just perpetuate the same idiotic cycle time and time again. That's how we make money.
That sounds about right. That's the sad part. All right. Next one up is from htbridge.com. Today, and this was on September 30th, more and more companies are offering bug bounty programs, or in other words, they're offering money if you report bugs. What the fuck? Sard's playing with a really old synthesizer there. You know, I don't... This blog post is full of a lot of... it's not the best written for reading out on the air. Short version was, at High Tech Bridge, they found a bunch of cross-site scripting vulnerabilities for Yahoo. And so they submitted them to Yahoo's bug bounty program. And Yahoo gave them a whopping $12.50 in the Yahoo store credit for their cross-site scripting bugs.
All right.
Most bug bounties start at the $1,000 level to try to incentivize you to give the company the bug as opposed to going straight to the underground markets to sell them, because you make significantly more money than that on the underground markets. So I just...
How much they give them?
Missing the point.
Yeah, exactly.
Apple gave them $12.
No,
Yahoo. Wow. Yahoo.
Yahoo.
Yeah.
For cross-site scripting bugs, those are kind of a big deal on something like Yahoo.
I didn't realize Yahoo was still around.
Oh, yeah. Big email provider.
So Yahoo's not going to be getting any more bugs reported to them first.
Not until they revamp their bug bounty program, which I thought I saw something earlier that they might have announced that they were working on it after that story dropped.
Yes,
but yeah, that's pretty bad. I mean, nobody's going to give them their bugs for $12 when they can go on, what's the Carter CC forum or whatever, and get a couple $100 for a decent cross-site scripting. Yeah. Sorry, that's the point of the bug bounty program, is to offer more than the black market guys give you, or at least enough that you'll get the bug instead of the black market guys.
Yeah, and you're right. Too. I saw something earlier today where they are revamping that policy, so it's going to be normal. It's like $1,000 to $15,000 for a bug reporting.
You know, it might just be that Yahoo can't afford to pay.
That wouldn't surprise me. They've been going downhill for a long time.
It's like, yeah, we'd like to have a bug bounty program, but we've only got like $50 in the checking account, right. So, you know.
Well, they just got a new CEO not too long ago, and so, I don't know. Maybe they had to pay a lot of bonuses to get that. I think it's a chick, if I remember correctly. Get her on board.
Didn't they bring in somebody from HP?
Yeah, it was the chick from HP was their CEO. Now she's Yahoo CEO.
Cool. All right, next story up. This one's from ZDNet. There are many reasons to switch to a Linux desktop from Windows. Better security, not having to worry about possible built-in privacy leaks, and last but never least, Linux is cheaper. A lot cheaper.
I have a problem with that second sentence. Built-in security or privacy issues? Unity and Amazon search. Fuck you. Fuck you, hardcore. Fucking canonical.
I thought they fixed that. I thought it was off by default.
Well, you know, it's on by default last time I heard, but they made an option to where you could turn it off.
Oh, so you actually can turn it off now. Well,
you can turn it off now, but it's on by default because they're pieces of shit.
Yeah.
That's what you really think, Sod.
Arch or Debian or
not
something.
Mad about that at all or anything. Am I fucking Unity piece of shit?
Well, I mean, the XFCE build is fine. I mean,
yeah, no, I've totally dropped Ubuntu because of their bullshit.
Yeah. I'm pretty much sticking to Debian, and I'm using Mint on my desktop here, but I'm doing my media work for Codex.
I've got
so
Mint on everything now.
Yeah. So, anyways, where was I? The big reason why the Germidine, or I'm not saying that right at all, it's a French word. The I have no idea how to say that. Anyways, which with the Police Nationale serves France as a national police force and has slowly but surely been moving to a customized version of Ubuntu Linux from Windows XP. So they've probably stripped the Unity crap out. In a European Union report for government administrators, Major Stephanie Drummond of the French Home Office is reported to have said at the Evento Linux conference that using an open source desktop lowers the total cost of ownership by 40% in savings on proprietary software licenses and reducing costs on IT management. Using Ubuntu Linux massively reduces the number of local technical interventions. So what they're saying is they don't have to send a tech out to clean spyware off nearly so often. In 2010, Jean-Pascal Chateau, the commissioner of La Grandeur Nationale, said that the project, or said of the project, we weren't expecting technical problems, or we weren't experiencing technical problems, but financial ones. For the same amount of work, yielding the same results, we realized that Windows would cost us about 2 million more euros than Ubuntu every year. Today, the German Day said that it has deployed 3,700 Ubuntu Linux desktops. By summer of 2014, all 7,200 PCs are... I'm saying that wrong. It's 37,000 and 27,000. I'm already on the red stag, so yeah, I'll just get over it. Are expected to be switched to Ubuntu. Also, nice thing about switching to Ubuntu, you don't have to swap out the hardware so often. According to Derman, this may be Europe's and possibly the world's largest example of a government agency using the open source software and desktops. So I'm going to quit reading the rest of the story there because they're all just talking about it. But essentially, French police switched to Ubuntu because it was cheaper.
Yeah.
So what the hell is going on in the IRC?
Ignore it. I'm yelling at people. No.
Why?
Someone's trying to compare Linux to Apple products, which is totally wrong and bad.
Burn the IRC. IRC now.
Burn it now.
I'm just going to close the IRC right now because I need to do the rest. I need to finish up the show and not watch that. So there. I'm closing it right now because you guys have your flame war. That's fine.
Okay.
So... I don't know. Unity kind of has some Apple lust there.
Don't even get involved, Morps. Walk away now.
Another reason
cool
why
cool men don't look at explosions.
Oh, come on, man. Where do you stand on this? Let's get that on before I go to the next story. Come on.
No. I'm not going to flame on the internet.
Yep, good for you.
Even All if right. I win, it's like... competing in the Special Olympics, I'll still be retired.
In local news today, man avoids being mauled by not poking a bear with a stick.
Oh, failed that one a few times. Anyways, next story up is from The Guardian. California Governor Jerry Brown has signed a bill outlawing so-called revenge porn and levying possible jail time for people who post naked pictures of their former partners. The bill, which takes effect immediately, makes it a misdemeanor to post identifiable nude pictures of someone else online without permission with the intent to cause emotional distress or humiliation. The penalty is up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. Until now, there has been no tool for law enforcement to protect victims, the bill's author, Senator Anthony Canella, said in a statement. Too many have had their lives upended because of an action of another they had trusted. Canella, a Republican, says that revenge porn is a growing problem in the age of social media when photos and videos that were made privately during a relationship can find their way onto hundreds of websites. Before the criminal law was enacted, California allowed victims to sue their virtual assailants, but said that it is an expensive and time-consuming option. The ACLU has opposed the bill, arguing it might restrict free speech rights, which has been a concern in other states as well. Florida lawmakers rejected a similar bill this year after constitutional free speech concerns surfaced there. So, you know, a couple weeks ago, we talked about how California was considering this, so they've passed it. And I guess for anybody wondering, revenge porn apparently is a thing.
Yeah, exgirlfriend.com is pretty decent.
Thank you, Madman.
How about just not letting people take nude photos of yourself or not taking self photos of yourself nude? Just saying.
Just realize that if you do it, it's going to end up somewhere.
Yeah. Well, it does say identifiable, so just be sure to make sure it's from the neck down.
Do the Japanese black bar thing over the eyes that they seem to do in everything.
Yeah, there you go.
What about personal responsibility?
It's California, Madman.
And I'm still thinking, if after I spooge in a chick, that's considered her property, if I'm able to get her to concede to letting me videotape whatever we're doing, that belongs to me. I am the copyright holder, damn it.
No shit.
Protect my rights.
Oh, yeah, you just need to roll it in with the DMCA.
Yeah. I mean, this is going to endanger Hollywood. I'm not sure how, but I can work this out to where this is bad for Hollywood. They need to change this law.
It's only in California. It's okay. Fucking California, the state of the nation.
What do you have to do? Prove it was posted from a California IP? I mean, how does that work?
I guess.
Yeah, how would jurisdiction work on that?
How do you prove that, what did they say?
That you didn't consent.
Well, yeah, that you didn't consent, but it said you have to,
Okay, now that we filmed the sex tape, I need you to sign this form.
There it is. How do you prove intent to cause emotional distress or humiliation?
The name of the site that you posted to.
I guess that's a good start. I was just trying to make her famous,
Your Honor. She said she wanted to be a model. All right. This next one is a lot of fun. It's from KongiMem.com. That's the company that makes it. They make a chip. The KongiMem CM1K chip is the first ever ASCIC version of the KongiMem neural network product line optimized for cognitive computing. It features 1,024 neurons working in parallel, implementing two renowned nonlinear classifiers. It can recognize patterns at high speed while copying ill-defined data, unknown events, and changes, blah, 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 blah. This chip has a kilobyte of what they call neurons, which are essentially a stripped-down microprocessor. So it's got 1,024 cores, roughly. They're calling it a neuron, so I'm guessing they've modeled the processor after an actual neuron. It's not alive, because that was much cooler. What was in my head was a lot cooler than what's actually for sale on DigiKey for $94. $94, 1024 core processor.
Wow.
Now the thing's only running at 300 megahertz, but they're advertising it as pattern recognition for imaging systems, or for...
just because you can throw so many threads at it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, but it's running a kilobyte of what they call neurons.
Huh. That's awesome. Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's... and like I said, it's for sale in DigiKey for $94. Like, you can go buy this now.
I can get a 1,000-core processor.
Yeah, I don't know what you do with it, because it's slow and not i386 compatible, but
attempt to multi-box WoW.
If you could find something that would run on it, because I'm fairly certain it's not compatible with any of the major systems, you'd have to write your own. So I just thought the chip itself was interesting. Go check out the PDFs on it, because when I first saw it, I'm like, what, the living neurons they were talking about with rats? No, that's not it. It's essentially a 1024 core chip, but they call the cores a neuron.
Yeah, so, I'll have to pass that around to a couple of friends. That's cool.
Yeah, it's interesting. So that's just, here's a link. Go check it. Want to throw that one out there. And for a good what the fuck story, this one's from the New York Post. Don't want your web dating service matching you up with any fatties? There's a fee for that. OkCupid.com, which bills itself as the best dating site on earth, is now allowing users to filter out their prospects by body type. The 9-year-old site, whose basic service is free, is charging a filtering fee of $4.95 to $10 a month for its A-list members. It allows them to hide the body types they're not attracted to. The site offers 10 body type choices, beginning at thin, ranging to average, a little extra, full-figured, overweight, and even used up. What's used up?
I don't know.
That's another way of saying morbidly obese. If you don't want her to be in two cripple carts while you're going through Walmart.
Please tell me they have an absolutely destroyed section.
If you don't like anyone larger than average, then you can filter them out. Or if you're into chubby prospects, you can filter everybody else out. Okay, Cupid said singles are going to size up their date prospects according to what they consider physically attractive anyways, so the site is doing nothing different from what goes on in bars and clubs. But outraged critics say that body type filter is a form of online discrimination. How dare you self-identify on the site, and how you're going to be perceived by your date or on your date by your date is going to be a point of potential insecurity, one OkCupid, Alana Massey, 28, told ABC News. However, site co-founder Sam Yagan said that the filter option is, well, just an option. It's the idea that it is somehow pejorative, I think, just doesn't hold water, just by the fact that people are choosing to self-identify that way, he told ABC. I think it is an obvious feature of the dating site. So, you know, that's true. That requires you to be honest in your profile for it to work. But Oh, and they say you can leave the body tag blank, so it wouldn't work for that. But oh, here it is. The used up category is apparently for people who don't take body type or don't take the body type issue all that seriously. Well, that's what that's for. What?
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. It'd
be like an NA. What?
I don't know. Anyways, yeah, I just
okay, they're wanting to be a less strict, beautiful people.
I don't know. I just thought it was hilarious because they've got a no fatties option.
That's interesting. I'm sure there'll be a big old uproar.
But that's the thing. There are people getting pissed off at him for giving the people the option.
Yeah, I honestly kind of figured there already was that option, but apparently not.
Apparently not. So, all right. We're 10 minutes over the hour mark already, so let's quickly go do this because I don't have much for you. Ah, good and racist. Anyways, all I've really got in Digital Dojo is a link to Iron Geek's site. He has posted all of the DerbyCon 2013 videos, and you should check them out. There's some real good ones in there.
Awesome.
So,
yeah, recommend.
I know RU and I went through like last year's. I damn near watched all of them.
Me too.
Oh, yeah, DerbyCon's awesome. I'm really disappointed I didn't get to go this year. It just didn't work out. But I'm going to try for next year. So, anyways, yeah, all the videos are up on Iron Geek's site. And Iron Geek usually does a pretty good job of capturing these things, and there's some really interesting looking ones in there. There was one in there about getting an InfoSec or an information security awareness. I'm sorry, an information security awareness program off the ground. They had one of those in there. Yeah, they've got all kinds of little things in there about stolen data. I'm just kind of reading through some of the titles now. Security sucks and now you're wearing a nursing bra. Paul Isidorian's talk. Wait a minute, what?
Yeah.
They've got Dancing with Dalvik. That would be an Android hacking video in there. So all kinds of good talks. And DerbyCon's really good about usually getting them all up there. So looks like there's only one that hasn't been posted, and that's on hiding stuff in NAND flash memory. So, yeah, applying the 32 Zombieland rules to IC security. That looks like a good one. Yeah, there's all kinds of good stuff on there. So, anyways, take some time, check that out. Always worth your time for DerbyCon talks. Of course, listen to the stream. We just got it working again today, hopefully. Working well. Pure Decking every Thursday. Shoot the Noise on Wednesdays. Missing Dialogues on Tuesdays. Tomorrow, we've got a Let's Get Drunk with me and Madman, at least. I believe Rofaxon said he'd be back, too, so there'll be that. Lore is doing the Drunken Plot anime review show on the Fridays we don't do Let's Get Drunk. So there's always somebody getting smashed on the station on Friday nights. And, of course, I have nothing on Saturdays. Have I missed anybody?
I think so.
I think that's it. All right. And RU's already... Oh, that's great.
He's not a fatty either.
That's fantastic. RU's already rating OkCupid for the fatties. So,
Oh, that's the chick's address that... Elena Massey that complained.
Oh, you just had some fun. Okay, never mind.
Yeah.
Of course, the Galaxy 15 radio site, the Twitter handle, the feedback form, there are forms, actually. We've got two. We've got a music suggestion form on there as well. The Galaxy 15 radio sim on OS Grid, which I don't think anybody's checked in like a month. The subreddit and the IRC channel, which I just dived out of so I could finish the freaking show. Did I forget any other means of getting a hold of us? I suppose you can send telepathic messages to Big. just be careful about what you'll get back. So,
and this girl plays a lot of softball.
God, that's all I've got. I'm going to hit play on this music now.
Travel the machine, can't you see through the screen?